Hi all. This is a special version of the 69 podcast. The audio from a recent online call put on by the new Advocates for Connected Experiences focused on the challenges of getting people back to work and what that means for connected experiences and technology. The chat, done on a video call, features senior folks from several organizations talking about what's changed, what's going on now, and how technologies are being applied. I was the moderator. On the call, you'll hear from Kim Sarubi from ACE, Joey Lloyd from Avixa, Trent Oliver from the Themed Entertainment Association, Debbie House from Retail Touchpoints, Sibel Jones from SEGD, Brian Mazaros, also from SEGD, and you know him from OpenEye Global, Kim Frank from Geopath, David Drain from ICX Association, and Beth Warren from CRI and the Digital Signage Federation. This podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at ScreenFeed. Check them out for a huge variety of subscription content feeds to engage, entertain, and inform viewers of your screen network. Now on to the call.
My name is Kim Sarubi. I am chairwoman of ACE, Advocates for Connected Experience. I was also chairwoman of the Digital Signage Federation.
Hi. I'm Trent Oliver. I'm Principal and Managing Director of Blue Telescope, an interactive multimedia location-based experience company, all those things. And I'm also President of the Eastern Board of the Themed Entertainment Association.
Joey.
Go ahead.
Hey there, my name is Joey Lloyd. I am the Senior Director of Communications at Avixa. We are the Audiovisual and Integrated Experience Association.
Debbie?
So my role is a little bit different probably than the rest of you. I'm the executive director of content for Retail Touchpoints. We're a digital publication and event company. I've been covering the retail industry for so many years, I can't even remember now, but I'm thrilled to be part of the group.
Sibel?
Hi, I'm Sibel Jones. I am the very new CEO of SEGD, which is the Society of Experienced Graphic Designers. Thank you, Trent. Previously, I spent 30 years of my career in the exhibit and experience design realm as a principal and executive director for Gallagher and Associates.
Great. Brian.
I'm Brian Mazaros, past president of SEGD and also CEO of an experience design agency called OpenEye Global.
Trent Refazzo, David.
Hey there, David Drain, managing director of the ICX Association. ICX stands for Interactive Customer Experience. I also head up events for NetWorld Media Group.
Great. And Kim.
I am Kim Frank. I am the president of Geopath. We are a trade body on behalf of the out-of-home and digital out-of-home ecosystem. We provide measurement for all kinds of signage across America.
Great. I think somebody else just popped in, but as they come up on the screen, if they do. I'm Dave Haynes. I'm the moderator today. I'm a market analyst, a digital signage guy. I write a blog called 69, which I've been doing since the dawn of man, and also a podcast related to that. I'm an ex-journalist, so I'm kind of used to refereeing this sort of thing. Today, we're on this call, Zoom call, talking about how we all get back to work. How do we return to whatever the new normal is in retail, in public spaces, in themed entertainment areas, airports, everything else. And it's a big challenge because it's a moving target. And right now we're experiencing a lot of, you know, weird things going on and a lot of hacks, so to speak, out in particularly retail spaces where they're just trying to figure it out as the guidelines shift and the rules change. So I don't know who wants to kick it off and just kind of say what are you coming up against? What are your members experiencing, and how are they trying to figure all this stuff out? Joey.
So we've definitely had, as our core members of manufacturers and AB folks, you know, they've been out on the front lines really since the get-go supporting, you know, the healthcare staff. They've been you know, using their live events companies to help build, you know, on the fly areas. They've been actually doing work in places that have been closed. So if we think about arenas and public spaces, some of that work is still happening. And, you know, working with OSHA and, you know, just gathering up that information and curating the best we can, but it is definitely a mix at this point of what's going on and how people are staying safe. You know, every state has a different designation of what stage they're in, what that means. And, you know, truth be told, I think, you know, I've also heard from several people that the idea of masks, no mask, what are we going to do? It's also becoming a political statement, which is something that I think every organization and every company is dealing with. So right now, I sit on this call as much as you know, AVIXA as, hey, we want to learn as well. We want to know what's going on.
It's interesting, if you think in terms of AV technology in particular, how things are starting to bubble up. I was writing the other day about a Danish soccer team, a football team that was using big DirectView LED panels, like the big billboard size panels in their stadium, so they could use a Zoom call like this to bring their season ticket holders into the ground, so to speak, virtually to watch it. And I'm seeing churches that are, and even high school graduations and other types of graduations where they're creating almost like drive-in theaters using temporary LED displays and everything else, just to try to, you know, figure out a way to get people together safely and create some kind of communal experience.
It's that combination of physical and digital, right? We're still humans. And even though we're supposed to be socially distancing and, you know, staying X number of feet apart or not getting into those group spaces, we still crave the interaction. And the soccer team that's done that, it's impressive. It's a lot better than the piped in, you know, cheers that you hear, or the chanting. Seeing it on screen is way better. And if you think about the drive-ins, and, you know, I've heard not only drive-ins for things like graduations, but movies, concerts, you know, we're still craving those interactions. And so that's what the path forward looks like. Our CEO, Dave Lebuskis, talks a lot about a better normal. There's no going back, and you know, we can talk about the new normal, but what about a better normal?
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Joey. I loved hearing that you say better normal versus new normal, because there are some terms, and as a journalist and an editor, you know, like, I'm so over omnichannel at this point, right? I'm so over unprecedented. I don't want to hear that word ever again. And new normal.
I'm going to bring that out.
Yeah. And new normal has such a better, you know, feeling behind it. I mean, the better normal versus new normal, because new normal's had so many definitions over the years. Well, I mean, I just want to say, from the perspective of the retailers and the industry, I think it's an opportunity for associations and companies like yours, because the term that we're using to describe what needs to happen in business right now is accelerate. And that's because, you know, you can't sit on your laurels anymore. You can't, we were going to, you know, implement all these cool technologies, but we're doing other things and we're going to wait. You can't wait anymore, right? So, you know, so that's, I think, a really good perspective and approach for all of you to have when you're having conversations in the industry, is to talk about that need to accelerate innovation and digitization. Because if you want to survive, you know, and we know there are going to be a lot of businesses that don't survive, but if you want to survive, you know, you need to accelerate, you know, all the innovation that you guys are talking about.
I think what just to add is this, oh, sorry, Sybil. And you can actually kind of back this up. I think one of the challenges that we have seen, I'm sure Sybil can comment, is that, you know, a lot of different environments have the challenge of their space. Yeah. And how do they bring technology into it? Because there's the restraints. I mean, it's great for stadiums. Obviously, there's space there. And it's great for other environments and some retail. But the reality is there's some retail stores that just don't have the square footage to accommodate everything that we're talking about. So it's the challenge, I think, for them to find creative ways to do something using technology. And It kills me too, because you see a lot of bad examples of once going out there and just using generic signage or spray painting lines on the ground. And that's a quick fix, but it's not a long-term fix. And so I think us, from all our point of views, is how do we put strategies in front of practitioners on how to best use elements of digital and elements of static signage to keep safe distances and, you know, inform them on best practices during this time and moving forward. It's not just a short term, it's a long term.
Yeah,
there's something interesting, Brian, to build on that. And there's this irony, because I personally worked on the International Spy Museum, the first one, and then the recently opened, just 1 year old, new one. And the biggest complaint they had after opening was density. And there's so many interactives, and people weren't able to access the interactives. And so they were going in and moving interactives. And the irony now, they're one of the first to reopen. And they're going to, you know, they have put in a lot of tools. They're using a personal stylist. They're giving people masks. They're giving people sanitizer. They're bringing on, they had to let go of a lot of their part-time staff. So the permanent staff will be managing people. But the irony of this is that we were designing solutions for how to get more people through. And now it's the opposite. Well, if you think about the user experience, in some ways now, if they feel safe and if Spy Museum does a good job of keeping their environment clean, they're going to have a more concierge experience, because they're going to have the museum to themselves and 10 other people in a gallery. So that's one interesting outcome of this. Certainly the financial model of that is challenging. But then on the other side of it, museums are saying, how they've always been wondering how they could be more relevant and they could capture more audiences. And this is where the digital realm, I think, plays a big part, not to replace museum or physical cultural experiences, because we all love those and they mean a lot to us. And we go to museums and cultural activities as a family and friend gathering, right? That's a cultural gathering. But it is allowing and prompting and accelerating, as you said, their understanding that they need to be accessible in other ways than just their physical form, right? And so how can they provide that access, you know, in the digital realm? Because we know we're going to have openings and closings, and we won't be able to accommodate the numbers that we had before.
Trent.
One of the things, a friend of mine, Kyle Osier, who's a creative director in San Francisco, on his blog, he wrote something that I keep saying. We're not looking at screens, we're connecting through screens right now. We are connecting. I mean, look, 40 years ago, this wouldn't be happening. But now we can. We may all complain about the Zoom meeting, but it's possible. And this is going to be part of, you know, just as Joe said, it is a better future of, like, how do we go forward? We're never going to, we're going to have parts that always stay. That'll be the in-person experience, the digital experience, and a full 360 of how do we manage that based on wherever we are, whether it's a museum, a theme park, a retail space, that full experience. And we're also, you know, museums are learning from theme parks that at the moment it may be at a museum that you have to have a one-way curated tour, that you don't have people wandering all over exploring because we have to keep social distance. But whatever things we're putting in place have to be part of that user experience. It has to matter and make sense. That will take, you know, we're thinking that takes it away from the political and more of part of the story. And it'll be fascinating how we put all this in context later on, you know, and look back at this time. But, you know, it is an acceleration. We were going digital. We were going social. Now it all has to be tied together. And the physical is not... the physical may not be like the big the big piece. The physical may be just part of one of the pieces that, you know, maybe it's elevated in status and you do that less often, you know, but it's part of the total experience. I don't know. And also the whole touch versus non-touch, you know, we're seeing there's a lot of technology for non-touch. We just don't really have the UX down to, so that it feels comfortable and easy for people. Now we got to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, the technology's there. We'll figure out how that does it. And we'll have those experiences because they really do matter. People really want to be in person.
I assume experience is something that's always being redefined, but has experience really, really changed because of all of this?
I mean, I was just going to say that's the other positive that comes out of this is that, and we know it from our experience, right? We wouldn't have been doing this Zoom call even 6 months ago, that consumers are now becoming more comfortable with this digital experience. And so that's another way it's accelerating itself, right? Because there's a reason why we haven't been doing, it took us such a long time to get from, you know, credit card swiping to, you know, touchless, because consumers just weren't doing it and they didn't need to. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't more convenient for them, but now there's a need for it. And so the consumer, you know, the consumer acceptance of it has far exceeded where it would have been if this didn't happen, right?
I also think it's forcing us to create for a new generation, mm-hmm. Which I think we kept going, oh no, this generation won't accept it. Well, it kind of doesn't matter because the new generation and generations coming out, they're going to, they always were more important because they're growing and they will be taking over and they're comfortable in this area.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I think the only, you know, challenge I could see is that everything is accelerating and you do still have, you know, this just multiple generations out there that have different familiarities with technology. And I see it myself with my parents, you know, so for as much as you want to quickly accelerate it, you have to figure out a way how to gradually do that so that there's not this complete disconnect and this frustration that can mount. So you can see that, but so yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I kind of see as a challenge.
Yeah, some of that is just knowing your audience, right? Who's your...
Yes, right. Yeah, very well put.
Sorry.
I think that goes to, Brian, our role in all of this, because it's the curation. Everyone is gonna come in because they need to respond so quickly and they're going to do really horrible things. You know, I can only imagine all the projects that I worked on and I come back to and see what's happened. And so as a multidisciplinary, you know, partnership, and I was bringing this up on a lot of the conversations I've been having as a former designer, you know, the way that I operated and the organization operated is that clients hired us to solve their problems. I almost feel like our, you know, responsibility in the in our communities is to say, this is a problem. Why don't we try to solve it the appropriate way and then share or, you know, monetize back to the organizations that need that. And for example, with retail, you know, this is an opportunity for us to really curate and think about our communication with those end users and what they need and what they want. And that's where the digital and the physical have to work hand in hand, right? Because the digital messaging and conversation and interaction can be that personal touch point that can change from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m, depending on what's happening. You know, that's where I feel like us as a community could actually create tools to then, you know, be able to provide those organizations that need those tools.
I think that's just to add on to that. I think the other side to that, and you touched on, is just design in general, because we even see it too, and other environments as well, is that being rethinking about even the interaction, because people are so hesitant to touch screens, and we can educate on how to sanitize, but they're also looking for quicker interactions. So then there's an education. And I think even Adobe has done some too about how to make UIs a bit more effective, and how do you get down to the point so that interactions are within a few seconds as to several minutes. And now you even see it goes from interaction to even, you know, voice user interfaces now have become quite the topic, and talking about the use of Google Voice and other applications out there to mimic that. So that's an interesting part of this too, that we have to educate is how do you think of different ways to interact with people to interact with something.
David, I'm curious for your members, are they looking to your organization for guidance on what to do, how they deliver consumer experience now?
Thanks for that. I think that they're looking to their, so we represent a lot of different industries. So the restaurant industry is probably looking to the National Restaurant Association first and foremost as to the guidelines, and obviously the local and national, the CDC, all the different recommendations for how to serve customers in a safe manner. We are certainly having conversations with our members about how to do that from just the digital interactions. And certainly people are looking at, if you're in the restaurant space, drive-through obviously has become hugely important. Or if you didn't have curbside delivery, you had to scramble and figure that out. If you didn't have mobile ordering, you had to, really get that fast-tracked. So I think a lot of people who had their digital infrastructure in place have done really well. And those who were working on it, it's really been accelerated. So they're looking at those things. Some have concepts that don't, they're figuring out how to make it even work. If you had a buffet type concept, you're just, you didn't have a drive-through, you didn't have any of those things. You're trying to figure out just what is our whole concept look like in this new model. When I talk to folks in the hospitality space, they're struggling to see what it could look like if these numbers don't start to return, because it's not very sustainable if you only have, these super low occupancy rates and things like that. Now, of course, they're all the major hotel chains are implementing all their cleanliness standards and just taking it to a new level, which is a good outcome of this problem. I think the on the kiosk side, those folks are looking at, okay, what do I do to make sure people feel comfortable using this? Or, can I start making thermal scanning kiosks or, the sanitizer kiosks or something like that? So people are pivoting and trying to figure out how to make that work in this new environment. I heard an interesting comment. I've heard different things. People have turned off their marketing, in a lot of ways that they were trying to save money. And I heard different people say, this is not the time, to do that. Of all times, you need to be communicating to your customers how you're going to, that you're ready to serve them, how you're going to serve them, and establish that loyalty and be a company they can rely on now. Mm-hmm. In the financial space, I'll just comment that a lot of the service has come now. They've tried to they've closed the lobbies and they're trying to serve customers through a drive-through, which is not all, if you have a simple transaction, that's fine. But if you have a complex transaction, that's not a great experience. And so they are, I think we could see an increased use of interactive teller machines in going forward, which is just a more fancy ATM that has a screen and you can talk to a live agent, and maybe extend those into those lobbies where, there's 24-hour service. So just some initial comments there.
Kim, you're all about numbers. Your organization is all about media measurement and so on. I think you've had a lot of data that's indicating it's kind of coming back in terms of motor vehicle traffic and density of people in areas and so on. If we're at reduced density in terms of the number of people traveling in to go to work in an office because now they're working from home forever and so on, do the media models still work, not only just broadly for media, but when you get into things like theme parks where they have media networks and everything else, does it still work, or is it much more about the profile and quality of the people in front of these screens?
Yeah, it's funny because I think we were starting to migrate towards that before all hell broke loose a few months ago. You know, we were really like slowly pivoting towards quality of audiences rather than location, and how can we talk to those audiences, engage those audiences, and somebody used the word accelerate earlier. We've been saying like evolving the industry, the out-of-home industry has been forced to evolve incredibly rapidly over the last few months, migrating to talking about CPMs instead of, you know, discounts. Well, you know, maybe you're not reaching as many people with the 10 billboards you used to buy, but if you need to reach that many people, well, you know, a CPM makes sense. We might need to buy 13 billboards or 13 kiosks or whatever it happens to be. I know from a data standpoint, we were forced to pivot incredibly quickly. You know, the word on the street was there's no one on the streets. There's no one out and about. Why would we buy billboards when there's no one there?
Not but this past week.
There was not. Well, for sure. Now we got to look at that in the data. But we had to pivot really quickly and prove that there were still people out there. If anybody's been in their car, you know, there's still cars on the road. There's still people moving around. And we couldn't let the myth that there's no one outside continue. So we pivoted and we spun off, you know, real-time metrics. The entire out-of-home, digital out-of-home industry got together and built a measurement system on the fly. And now, you know, people are starting to ask us, so maybe we don't focus so heavily on predictive metrics. Maybe our focus starts to become on real time. And how does that change the way we buy and sell out of home advertising moving forward? So I think we've kind of migrated. We've fast forwarded. We've time traveled about 5 years in our industry. And I think from a tech and innovation standpoint, I liked the better normal, because I think when all of this goes away, we're going to be in such a better innovative position as a channel because of what has happened. Traffic is returning to normal. We saw it's a very local, hyper local experience. What we saw, there were some markets that traffic was actually up versus last year. And then, you know, there was New York City where you could look at any live camera in Times Square and see the incredible difference in traffic. But we're seeing that starting to come up too. And then there's, you know, waves. And I think, you know, there's certain markets that are still on the upswing from corona cases. You know, COVID-19 is still very much a thing, and it's starting to impact, you know, other markets where it wasn't before. So we just have to kind of keep our eyes on it, because this isn't gone. This is an ongoing phenomena, and it's going to just kind of come in waves across the country. So maybe New York comes back up in traffic, but, you know, the Carolinas are being impacted, so maybe that goes back down. We had to change the way we did business as an entire industry, but I think in the long run, it's going to end up benefiting us.
I've heard a lot of discussion around how screens in stores and signage in stores, whatever it may be, one of the things you now have to do in any kind of space that's welcoming visitors of whatever description is communicate the levels of cleaning and sanitization and distancing that you're doing. Is there a balance that you have to strike? Because I just wonder if I'm walking up to a store where it's telling me all these things about we clean it every hour and everything else, I'm going, do I want to go in here? Even if it is clean, it just sounds like I'm walking into a level 4 biotesting lab.
I think that's where the experience becomes even more important. We talked earlier about where does experience play now in this new world. And I think that's the experience that is important, is as we look at our consumers, you know, can they go out? Will they go out? Do they actually want to go out? You know, if you can buy everything online, you know, that you ever needed, why do you want to go in a store? Well, there's a special experience that you're looking for. And, you know, maybe the elite, you know, Black Amex, Neiman Marcus shoppers that used to get that personalized shopper. Maybe that's the experience that we're all going to start to get, because it gives us that solo time in the store. It's that really true experience, nothing that you can get online. That's what you get in a store. And I mean, that's one idea. There's certainly many of those, but I think this idea of experience and helping our consumers to not only feel educated, but to also feel safe, and then to feel like they are getting a special experience. I think that's where it all starts to come back together.
Trent.
Yeah, no, I think that, and to on top of what, you know, Joey's talking about, I think there are two topics that are important in relation to this kind of thing, and it's communication and timing. And I just was working on, we're gonna be doing a special report on, you know, the buy online, pick up in store, right? It's just one example. But we're talking about, and we're talking about safety of consumers, right? And so as stores are reopening, you know, maybe everybody doesn't want to come all the way into the store and search the aisles, and but for retailers and, you know, businesses to come back at all, they're going to need to get the consumers to be doing the digital and physical experience. And so you need to be communicating it properly, and you need to time everything properly because of the expectations of consumers, right? And so for buy online, pick up in store, for example, you need to have the right signage in place so that people know where to go when they come in the store. You need to make sure that they're not standing in line for an hour waiting to pick up their item, you know? And so, you know, so that's why I think those two topics, the topics of communicating appropriately and effectively, and it's going to change as the crisis changes, right? We're slowly reopening stores. So now we're dealing with, you know, things like buy online, pick up in store, and how to deal with that. And there's signage and there's communication, you know, involved in those things. But then we're going to move on to another phase, and then there's going to be, you know, other signage and communication and timing issues that everyone's going to have to deal with. So, and just in general, I think we're all consumers. And so, you know, when you ask, is it too much to tell people we clean every hour? Think about it as a consumer. I would like to know that. You know, I was in Trader Joe's the other day and I was in line, and then they said, can you move over to this next line because we're sanitizing this station now? And I was happy to do it because I was like, that Trader Joe's doing a good job. They're sanitizing, you know, during the day. Okay, I'll stop.
Two other things. Whatever that in-location experience is, it's got to be cool. It's got to be, you know, if we're asking people to go out and have an experience in a location, we have to think about why. If it's average, why would they do it? You know, what is it that makes it cool? We have to still do our work of making whatever it is we do unique. And the signage and all of that, it has to have the attitude of whatever you are. Gatorland in Florida, they did a video. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. It's great. You know, they brought attitude and fun, and, you know, you want to go and social distance. You know, you want to go and be one alligator apart. You know, whatever it is we're doing, we have to have some humanity, some humor, you know, whatever our brand represents. Okay. If we're very strict, okay, we're very strict. But yeah, we need to do it, but we need to do it well. And then people won't feel lectured. It'll be part of the fun and part of whatever it is we're doing.
Yeah, going out right now feels like you're in Moscow in 1976 lining up for bread.
Yeah, it's getting worse. Yeah.
That's a very metro opinion, though. Like, if you talk to our clients in Louisiana, they're getting their nails done and their hair done, and they think that, like, you guys are overreacting out there in New York. I was on with a client who said, I got to go. I have an appointment for Botox a few weeks ago. And I got like twitchy, like, I'm not even buying milk. It's the New York experience, the city, the Chicago, the LA experience is incredibly different than the rest of the country. But I also think there's like a pent up demand. I know it's going to take me to get like to get work ready, or like actual people to see me ready. It's going to take me like 3 weeks of recovery time at salons and spas and things. There's like this pent up demand for haircuts and manicures and pedicures that I don't think people care
if they are at risk or if anything's been cleaned, because our nails look so awful. And we're gonna also, for at least a brief amount of time, not take for granted things that we used to take for granted. Not take for granted going to a movie theater or being able to go to a museum with our children or being able to actually try on a pair of pants in a store. And that won't last forever, but there's going to be a halo of just the privilege of being able to be in a store that I think we should really take advantage of. Like, we're starting to talk to our members about welcoming people back out of home. Like, hey, I know it's been a while. Welcome back.
But I think, though, just back to Dave's point about communication, and I think even Debbie and Trent touched on it, is that I think there's still a social responsibility for communication. And I think there's also a responsibility on good design and perception, because I think it's if the perception is there, you will feel safer going in. If the environment, retail, hospitality, quick serve, whatever, has demonstrated that they actually care and they're trying to create an environment. I mean, yes, there's people that will go in regardless, but there's also people within that population that are still going to be careful on whether they go into it. And I think to Dave's point, I mean, there are environments where, yeah, I don't want to go in there because someone slapped up a sign that they clearly printed out a few minutes ago and didn't really give thought. And how am I supposed to trust that if they're not taking the time to even put together a sign that makes me feel comfortable?
Spell check it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, well, it's really true, because one of the things that I've been thinking about, and this brings up, like, right, brands, national brands, global brands, and if you are a brand and working in Alabama and in New York City, I mean, part of that communication you're bringing up, Brian, is how we equalize the experience, right? Because in some ways we have to train people, because some people don't have to behave a certain way because of their environment. But if, say, they go to New York City, they are going to have to behave. And I feel like in our whole world became so disingenuous with our user interactions, right? We sit on the phone forever. The reason why I've stayed with Sapphire Chase is because when I call them, a person picks up the phone. I keep saying, put me on an advertisement. I love you. I tell everybody. But I think if you think of the old days, what retail was you came in and somebody, you know, even your groceries, some kid went back and he knew you and he got the things and he brought them to you. And then we expanded into our mega shops of Walmart and Target. And I think that thing of, like, what people are willing to risk for what they really want, they will. But the way that we curate and design that interface of that experience is going to be the winners and the losers, whether it's retail, museums, cultural institutions, because that's really where that communication becomes key. And I think it'll be, hopefully in the end, it's gonna push us to remember that the end user is the person that we're supposed to be doing our work and design for, you know?
I wonder if I'm an operator though, or even if I'm a customer, I'm listening to this notion that we need more curated and special and memorable experiences. And at the same time, we're talking about lowered throughput of customers. Both of those things sound expensive. Like the companies, the retailers, everybody else are going to survive are those at the high end, and all the ma and pa kinds of businesses that need to get, you know, X number of people through their doors every day. They're going to see that lowered by 2/3 or whatever it may be. How do they do that? How do they make what they do special other than, you know, warmly greeting the people who come in?
It's a challenge. And so our colleague, a lot of you probably know Ed King, right? He started Shopping Night in America on Facebook for those small businesses, and so that they could communicate digitally and sell digitally when maybe they weren't capable of doing that on their own because they were such a small business. I mean, those are examples, those very small businesses, a lot. And again, a lot of them are not going to survive. They're already out of business. But those are the ones that need to pivot from pure physical to physical and digital. They're going to have to find creative ways to communicate and to sell digitally, you know, those very small businesses.
But, you know, we're seeing that. We're seeing, it's interesting. I mean, and I live, you know, I live in the Northeast, but farmers markets, you know, people are focusing on, I think it's making us highly aware of where any of our products come from. Mm-hmm. And so, and we also love our communities. And so people are, I am seeing a lot more people. It's this crazy thing between Amazon and super local. It's the ones in between that are the challenges, right? The shopping mall pieces. But I am seeing a huge effort on behalf of local small businesses to allow people to pre-order. It's a little low tech, you know, but they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm hearing, and this is absolutely, this is just a guess listening to you guys, because right now we're saying, you know, if you're creating museum experience in Grand Forks, North Dakota versus Brooklyn, you're just not creating the same experience. And for retail or anything else, I think that in some ways, the really small mom and pops have as much access to social media and hyper-localized messaging. They may be able to do well if they really focus on, you know, look, I'm not blanketing the county, I'm blanketing my town, you know, make it a cool thing. And that kind of like more personalized experiences. I don't see Target and Walmart being able to keep that up, but you know, my little place in town might be able to do that because they don't need as many people to be successful. It's my gut, and I have no reason to even say this, is that the very big and the very small will survive, but the middle is going to have a problem.
I'm one of the things I write about technology every day, and I get carpet bombed every day by PR pitches from companies about this and that. And I wonder about some of the tech that's being floated out there and introduced, like thermal sensors and face pattern detectors and things that are recognizing, oh, you don't have a mask on or any of those things. Those seem like interim, I don't even want to call them solutions, but things that you can put in to almost pacify the customer base and make the retailer feel like they're doing something, or the attraction operator feel like they're doing something. Are they real solutions or just stuff?
A personal opinion, I think it's somebody going, hey, I can sell these. I mean, we all know, great, if you have a fever, that could indicate that you're sick. You could also be asymptomatic and viral shedding all over the place. So does it work? No, I think it makes people, maybe a business, feel better, or a business be able to say, hey, I did this, so you can't come back if you get sick. There's a lot of solutions out there that sound really frightening and sound like they take your identity and track you in ways that aren't comfortable. I think for more enclosed areas, say a museum, a theme park, something like that, you can set your own standards and you can make it part of, this is the experience, and it's a fun experience where we're all participating to try to, if people choose to do it, they'll do it. And if they don't choose to do it, they're not going to do it. We're going to be stuck in this way where we try to figure out how we keep people healthy. And it's going to ask everybody to make their own choices. You know, the cleanliness, the antimicrobial sprays and films, we can do all that. And we can do interactives that are touchless. And we can have ways where people stay 6-3 feet apart. You know, it will change as we go on. If it's part of the total experience, I don't think there's a one size fits all, and I don't think there's a panacea, buy this and you're fine, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, I think part of
the technologies that we're talking about, though, are going to stay, and there, and again, the word accelerate, the voice technology,
yeah,
you know, touchless retail in many forms, including payment and interaction and communication. Those things, you know, those things are going to stick around. Probably portable thermometers are going to be around for a while too. I think that, yeah, we all invested in that business, we'd, you know, be millionaires. But, you know, some of it will fade away, but, you know.
I'm on the fences with it. I mean, I kind of agree with Dave. I mean, when I read his blog, I get bombarded as well with all the gizmos and gadgets that are coming out. I think there's good intentions behind them from some. I think there's an honest belief that it will help or it will serve a purpose. I kind of agree with Trent. I don't think there's one size fit all. I think some of it's appropriate for some of the, you know, larger sized businesses. I mean, look, we even on the theme entertainment, I mean, Disney is talking about temperature scans. They're doing it at Disney Springs. So now obviously Disney has bought into it as a means of helping to prevent spread or control, but mom and pop shops are not going to have that ability to invest in those technologies. And if they do, I don't think they're going to be managed or taken care of the way that they should be. So I do think it's a creative way in which you have to communicate to your customer base on what measures you're taking to be safe. And there are resources out there. You know, there are a lot of opportunities for small businesses to look at what some of the larger guys are doing. You know, look at mom and pop grocery stores. Kroger put out a whole brand guideline and signage that they could download and they could adopt and they could print out and apply it to their own environment without it being, you know, Kroger-fied. That's a word. And you know, there's other applications on scan and go or, you know, contactless payment options that businesses can adopt that are inexpensive, that are entry level for them. And so there are opportunities. Cash. Huh?
I'm curious if we're seeing the end of cash.
No.
Because a lot of
people. No, I went yesterday and I got ice cream yesterday and I had to go out and back in because they're only using cash, which I thought was, that's the first time I've ever experienced that. And that was strange because they did everything to show their environment being safe. And you saw this like little sign that says cash only. And like, you should have put that bigger. There's an imbalance.
What ice cream store you went to?
Small batch. It was good. Delicious.
Oh, but that's to our evolving knowledge because, you know, some people are saying you can't get COVID through cash. You know, it's so interesting. And I just have to say, I can't remember who told me this. It was kind of frightening and frustrating at the same time. And somebody, maybe it was a podcast I listened to recently, that TSA is mostly for show. I mean, I have accidentally put illegal things through Dulles DSA. Like one time I made this whole trip with a box of box cutters only to realize when I got home that I had taken it with me from DCA to Vegas and back. And someone was saying, you know, it's just psychological. So I don't know. You know, some of these tools may be as psychological as they are effective. And you know, the temperature thing, we know that temperatures aren't necessarily a means to tell whether someone is, you know, spreading. So that's the interesting part. But I do think that there needs to be resources. I love the crowdsourcing. There needs to be resources that smaller businesses and organizations can go to and have best practices. And again, this is an interdisciplinary task, I think, because there's so many different aspects to how mm-hmm. we go back to doing anything safely, but also I think the humanely part is really key. And that's why we need to have leadership because otherwise, and Brian, your thing and the joke about the typo, I mean, we are highly sensitized right now. And you are absolutely right. If I saw something with the typo, I would be like, hell no, I'm not going in there. These people don't know what they're doing. And so we're having to rely on people we don't know, people next to us to behave, you know, people that are managing some 16-year-old kid managing, you know, a store. That's really interesting. How does design and how does digital communication help in those situations? I think it can.
David, you represent a lot of vendors within the ICX Association. Are they kind of scrambling to try to find a product or bundled solution of some kind that addresses these things? And are they doing so because they see a need, or they see a need to sell something?
That's a great question. And so it's going to vary on the type of member that we have. So I mentioned the kiosk, companies earlier. I think on, the digital signage side, I talked to NEC and they were obviously not selling a ton of digital signage, I don't think, but they're selling a bunch of monitors that people needed for all of a sudden the work from home environments. So certainly it's a combination of the two. People are making products that their customers need or want, whether it's, if they want thermal kiosks, I'm sure a company is happy to give that to them as a solution. Others are also pivoting and figuring out, okay, what do I do and what can I offer now that people want? Because so many people are on a holding pattern, or they're either on a holding pattern or they're on a project that's actually going really fast. Mm-hmm. They're telling me that decisions are getting made faster. So when they do have a project, they're really enjoying it because, you don't have it's easy to get a hold of people. Everybody's not out traveling and whatnot. They're focused and they're moving quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers your question. I haven't talked to everybody.
For sure. There's a big broad question around privacy that is an ongoing question. And one of the things that comes along with these face pattern detection systems and thermal sensors and backtracing apps and apps that allow you to do contact tracing of where was I and therefore who might have been in contact with me because I was asymptomatic and so on. Do you sense that the general public is more willing to kind of put up with that stuff right now because of the situation we're in? And is that an opportunity for certain companies to kind of race in and lay things down while they can? And Kim, I'm curious, I know you think a lot about this stuff.
Yeah, I think that people are very tolerant right now, but that's going to be incredibly short-lived. I do not see a United States that is okay with you taking their temperature before they let you into Disney World for a very long time. Like seems to me like it's almost a HIPAA violation to be taking people's temperatures against their will before you allow them to visit different establishments. I think from a location tracking to understand like where have people been, it's just people don't have a lot of tolerance for that stuff when life is normal. Life is very abnormal right now and it's a little scary for people. So right now they're tolerating it, but I think that as soon as we're out of the woods and people are starting to resume their normal activity, that there's going to be a lot of backlash for some of the stuff snuck in the meantime.
I agree. Totally agree with that. I think what I'm hearing, hi, it's Beth Warren finally breaking in, giving you.
who's talking?
Just when it's mine. Yeah, I'm so sorry, Dave. I wasn't able to show my face because I was having issues with Zoom 5. But as far as what we're hearing from our clients as it relates to thermal mirrors is, number one, its use for employees. It's really back of house. That's really where it's getting embraced. So, helping to monitor employees who are coming, in every day and making sure, they're safe and that the entry door is the first, point of protection or detection. But what we're also hearing on the flip side for front of house is that people don't want to be shamed. If they do have an elevated temperature, they just don't want to be called out on that. That's number one. And number two, they don't want that information being stored for long periods of time either. So we're managing through that. And we're making sure that any application of technology in both the UX and the back end are flexible enough to handle those individual requirements.
Like, what happens if somebody has some kind of underlying condition that they don't want public and comes in and has a fever every day? How are we going to navigate?
Absolutely. It's very, very sensitive.
And, you know, we're now seeing, you know, COVID committees and, you know, chief health officers and those types of positions popping up, at least at the enterprise level, to be able to put some parameters around that.
And there's even like mask shaming now. So I was in a conversation.
Totally. Right? Yes, there now, is. There's mask shaming.
Is it okay to tell somebody you need to put a mask? Like socially, we don't know how to handle somebody's not wearing a mask. Do we say
totally?
Something?
Totally. Especially in societies or urban areas that, you know, we're very densely populated. So now this elevates this sort of new self-awareness about distancing, which also then gives us sort of like this sense of permission to be able to tell people to back off and then put their face mask on as well. So you're sort of getting this this permission for confrontation where perhaps it didn't exist before.
And not to go down a total rabbit hole, but the schools are like starting to talk about what reopening looks like in September. And they're talking out here in New Jersey, at least, like the kids will be wearing masks. I have a 6-year-old, he can't keep his finger out of his nose. I can't imagine how he's gonna keep a mask on his face all day. But like, how does that even happen? And I think, you know, as businesses, we were really well prepared to migrate to remote work through channels like Zoom. I think the education system, and I don't know if anybody here is very involved in the education system, and not to steal focus from Dave's agenda, but like, how are the education systems handling this from a technological standpoint? I mean, my kids are having about 40 minutes a day of a Zoom interaction with their teacher, but it's the first time the teachers have ever used a Zoom portal.
Yeah, we can talk about education offline, because I was on the school board in New Jersey as well and have many teachers in my family. So we've been having these discussions. And the scariest part as parents is that we've been trying to keep our kids off of digital screens, right? And now, you know.
Maybe this is the next ACE call.
I would love to be on that call. I've got a lot of questions.
Okay. All right, we'll do that next.
Point out how many of us are from New Jersey on this call. We should have like a New Jersey team COVID.
I am almost now, but I was in New Jersey for 30 years and my kids grew up there and they're all in the area, Montclair, and two of them are in Brooklyn right now.
Yeah. I'm moving to Princeton next week.
Ah,
nice.
Jersey.
I'm on the shore.
Joycey. There's never anybody on these calls from Nova Scotia or Canada.
Dave.
I have a question about the privacy.
Okay.
I suspect there's a lot of contact tracing, or there's a lot of stuff we don't realize and are probably putting up with. You know, our own little spy device that we take everywhere, and facial recognition. And, you know, I suspect a lot of that's happening all over the place, but we're not aware of it. And maybe a lot of people don't care as much about it.
Some of it is a generational thing. Some of it is just like we were talking about before, psychological, right? And, you know, you know, on the topic though, one of the other issues that's going to come up as these things change is educating our and training our staff to deal with these things as they're changing, right? Because right now we've seen a lot of confrontations with customers and staff members, and staff members need to be trained. They need to understand what the policies are, then they need to be trained to be able to interact with consumers who are agitated and stressed, you know. And so that's one of the other
good
topics.
Good point.
Is so important as these things move forward. And then, it, you know, that just brings me to the top, the other topic, I know it's getting late now, of leadership at the top of our organizations. And how many of our leaders are really prepared for this kind of crisis in the first place, right? And how are they handling it? That's yet another topic.
Yeah, but one point on that, and I'm, you know, as I said, I'm brand new to SCGD, but, you know, the one thing that we haven't been very good about is prototyping and mocking things up and seeing what works before we implement, and everyone's rushed to just go and put some sort of solution or purchase something. I mean, you know, as a leader of a you know, this design and fabrication organization, I'm going to try to push for us to partner, you know, with designers and fabricators and to prototype things and give them, like, give it to John Hopkins or give it to whoever and let them play with it. I mean, this is like a great opportunity. I'm looking, you know, at Trent, you know, for us to step up and do some of this. We're going to have to do it for our clients and customers anyway, but we should be leaders. And then once we figure out things that work, then that should be, you know, knowledge sharing.
We have to do the next right thing.
All right. I'm cognizant of everyone's time and the time of our listeners. So I want to thank everyone for jumping on this and giving me and our listeners the benefit of your insight and experience.
I appreciate you.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.